Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services, and we're at facebook.com/radiocafe. Later on in the program, we're going to be speaking about the film Spoken Word. I'm very happy now to welcome Ida Kavafian. She is the artistic director of Music from Angel Fire, which is a festival happening this week, starting this weekend, August 20th, through the 5th of September in Angel Fire, Taos, Raton, and Las Vegas. Welcome, Ida, to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks, Mary Charlotte. It's nice to be here with you.
It's nice to have you in person. Yeah, we've had you on by phone in the past, but it's nice to have you at the baking company.
Yes, especially for me, too, to see your workplace here. It's great.
My work table. So you have been doing this. The festival has been going on for 27 years. You've been doing it for 26 years.
I, you know, somebody else asked me about that, and I said the following word. It's embarrassing.
Why?
I don't know. It seems like, you know, somebody in their life, they should be doing something else after 26 years. But, you know, it is just, it's a big part of my life. It is, but it is just one part, and it takes place during these upcoming 3 weeks. So I've always said, you know, every year I say to my board and my director, I say, are you sure you want me to continue? How about, you know, you get somebody new with more fresh ideas? And they each year say they think my ideas are fresh enough and, you know, let's keep going. So it is nice for me because it's like a second home out here.
So you live on the East Coast most of the year, and then you're out here in the summer. Well, tell us about, I mean, we have the Chamber Music Festival here, and we talk to Stephen Ovitzky every year. What do you do as artistic director? How do you keep it fresh? How do you program a summer?
Well, that's a good question, especially for this summer, because it is the bicentennial of Robert Schumann, his birth. And so, you know, when you have an anniversary like that, you have a wealth of material to choose from. And you know, when you love a composer like I love Schumann, it's a great excuse to play a lot of Schumann. Last year we had the same birthday for Mendelssohn. So we did a lot of Mendelssohn, also a lot of great chamber music from both of those composers. So this year I wanted not just to cover Robert Schumann, but to cover more about his life and his wife and their protege, Brahms. And so in my research, I saw that there was a real difference between the movement of the Romantics in Leipzig and in Weimar. And so there was, and the Weimar Romantics were the flamboyant ones, like Franz Liszt, you know, and all these great virtuosos. And so
In Leipzig, they were more restrained?
Exactly. I think they were more maybe traditional or more pure as they saw it. And so that was how I came up with this sort of overall theme, which is the Leipzig Romantics, a love triangle between Robert and Clara Schumann and their protege, Brahms. And you may know that Brahms, well, he was their junior by, I think, 20 years or so, but he had an infatuation for Clara Schumann that, you know, has been written about and talked about for all these years. And there's a lot of conjecture about, did anything happen? But Clara was incredibly in love with her husband, Robert. And so I think to see a life of love like they had, and then this kind of nurturing of their protege, Brahms, I think just made a nice subject for a festival. So we'll be doing a lot of Robert Schumann, Clara Schumann, and a number of pieces by Brahms as well.
What is Clara Schumann's work like?
Well, you know, when she was alive, she was extremely well known as a piano virtuoso, as well as a composer. And of course, you know, it's unusual enough now to have a composer who's a female, but imagine what it was like then. And she was wildly popular, just incredibly popular. and a great virtuoso and traveled around a lot. They had children, but Robert succumbed to mental illness so early in his life that she went back to performing after he passed away in an asylum, actually.
And he died young.
Yes. And she supported her family by performing, and her works are very, very beautiful. There's a piano trio that we're doing by her that's just lovely, just beautiful music, maybe not quite as thorny or involved as her husband's, a little more innocent and straight ahead, but still full of great melody and great, she's a great craftsman too.
There are so many stories in the history of art and literature and performance and music of women who were very, very well known in their time and who don't make the history books. And it's frustrating because I think probably history will show them to be the equals of their male counterparts, but you know, we don't hear about them.
Especially in those days when we don't have the luxury of being able to have heard her.
Right.
You know, there were no recordings. And so, you know, by all accounts, she was a great pianist, as wonderful as any man playing in those days. But we'll never really hear, unfortunately.
A movie was made about her life that is also going to be screening on the 26th of August in Angel Fire at the Angel Fire Resort Country Club, and that's with Katharine Hepburn.
Isn't that amazing? It's a great film.
I didn't
film.
Know about
You've
this.
Got to see this. It's so fantastic.
It's called Song of Love.
Yes. It was made in 1947, and there is a great scene where there's a big, very fancy party going on, and Franz Liszt sits down at the piano and plays this work that Robert had written for his wife as a present for her birthday, and it's called Widmung, this beautiful piece, and so Franz Liszt, in his inimitable way, you know, turned it into a big showy, virtuosic kind of showcase for himself, playing, you know, up and down the keyboard, millions of notes, and then he, you know, presents her with his version, and she just cuts him down. You wouldn't believe. It's a great scene because she says, you know, well, that's your way of doing it, but here's the way my husband wrote it. And she sits down and plays it. And then she gets up and says, Robert, I'm hungry. Let's go in for supper. It's great.
And you can totally see Katharine Hepburn doing that.
It's really a wonderful film, and I'm very excited we're showing it. We're actually going to also have some live music after the film.
So we're talking to Ida Kavafian, who is the artistic director of Music from Angel Fire. Now, you've got a lot of different music, and people can go to musicfromangelfire.org and look at the website for the programs and see what they might want to hear. You also have a composer-in-residence program.
Yes, we do. Every year we have an American composer as part of a program that is funded by the Hilde Howden, or the Bruce E. Howden, she named it after her husband, American Composers Project. And this wonderful lady, Hilde, has seen the importance of bringing new music into the repertoire. And with her help, we are able to commission a composer every year for a piece that's written especially for our festival to have a world premiere. This year is Lowell Lieberman, and he's a great composer, wonderful composer. He'll be with us for about a week, and we'll be doing three of his works, a fabulous flute sonata that Taro Helen O'Connor will be playing with Lowell at the piano. He's also an excellent pianist. And we'll also be doing a piano quintet of his, and then, in addition, a new piece which he's written for piano quartet.
So having a living composer and being able to commission something is great both for the festival and for that composer.
Yes, it is. I mean, I think because of all the new music I've played in my life, I'm able to go to these composers and say, look, we don't have a whole lot of money, but we have great musicians and a beautiful place and a wonderful atmosphere for creating something special. So that's how we get them to come, and we've had some incredible composers in the past, Joan Tower, Aaron J. Kernis, the list goes on and on of these really foremost composers of their day, and we're proud to have brought them to Music from Angel Fire. The other aspect of the composing thing, we bring a number of students from the Curtis Institute to the festival.
Yes, I wanted to ask you about that. Now, you teach at Curtis.
That's right, I do. I do. And what made me think of it is that the last 5 years or so, I've added a young composer in residence as part of that project. And it's fabulous because, you know, young composers, it's difficult to get performances of their works and, you know, forget about commissions. But these are students at the Curtis Institute. So they're just in the beginnings of their career and the beginnings of their creativity. And so it's been a really great addition to the festival. And I think also it's great for the young composer to be around the regular composer or the composer that's the sort of elder statesman. So it's been a great relationship between the composers.
Let's talk for a moment about this Curtis Institute where you teach, because you have all these folks from, students from Curtis coming out. It's an unusual, even among conservatories, it's unusual.
Well, it's a nice opportunity for me and for the students. Just a few words about Curtis. Curtis is probably the foremost conservatory, arguably, in the world. It is situated in a historic set of buildings just off of Rittenhouse Square in Philadelphia. And it has been in existence since 1924. And it was funded by a woman who was incredibly generous and felt so strongly about nurturing young talent. And that was Mary Louise Curtis Zimbalist. Anyway, so Mrs. Zimbalist, her husband actually was one of the directors and a violin teacher, started this school, and from the beginning, her intent was that no one should ever pay tuition. So we have these students who come and are able to get in only on their merit, only on audition. And the ratio between, you know, we have 160 students and between 85 and 90 faculty, which is just tremendous. I mean, the opportunity these kids have is just...
That's unbelievable.
They deserve it, you know. They're the finest talent on the planet, you know.
And they come from all over the world?
All over the world, yes. From Asia and from Europe and some Americans as well. But just... It's a privilege to teach there. It's just so incredible. It's like, you know, it's like driving a race car. You just guide it here and there. You know, you don't want to mess up too much. And because these kids, I think, they're going to make it no matter what. And I think the ratio of how many of the Curtis grads do go into music and have a successful career is really impressive. I mean, it's just higher, much higher than any other school.
And so by the time they're late teenagers and they arrive at Curtis, they've already had incredible training. And so
yes,
you just kind of guide them a little bit
yes,
more.
Yes, that's right. And actually, because of the makeup of the school, you can audition at any age. And so a lot of times we have a lot of younger kids. I've had students as young as 10.
Really?
Who were able to gain admittance on their playing. So it is, you know, when they're that talented, you can tell very early on.
Meanwhile, back in Angel Fire,
yes.
and Raton and Las Vegas and Taos and of course here in Santa Fe, you have musicians who are also world class at the height of their careers who decide they want to come and hang out in New Mexico for a few weeks at the end of every summer.
Yes, I think the musicians that come and participate in this festival really see the value of the atmosphere of this place and also the beauty of the place, the atmosphere of the concerts, the collegial quality that they can feel between between their colleagues. And And also, you know, just to mention the audience, you know, it's an audience that we've built up over all these years. And it's amazing to me still, even though I've been doing it all these years, we have, we play in a community that's just barely 1,000 year-round residents. And we get between 250 and 300 people sometimes at these concerts. It's just amazing. And so that just shows you the dedication and the trust that these people have, and they look forward very much to every summer when we all descend upon Angel Fire and become part of the community and create this great art.
There are many arts programs that are dedicated to and try to, you know, get funding for underserved communities and all of this, and here you are taking something that's not Albuquerque or Santa Fe and of world quality into other parts of the state.
Right. And with our Curtis students who are who come as part of the Young Artist Program, we go to the area schools and do a lot of outreach programs, between 30 and 40 concerts at all of these area schools, including Taos Pueblo and Mora and Cimarron, and luckily for us, the schools have just opened, during our festival, so we're able to go into the schools and present these young people. I think it's great for the students of the schools to see how young and how vital these Curtis kids are. I think they get a lot more enjoyment out of it than if we, the rest of us, were doing the young outreach programs. And
yeah, so I think they're their same age or a little bit older.
Yes, they can relate to them. Yeah,
and it must be very inspiring for them to see that this level of musicianship can be achieved.
Yes, and we send the young composer in residence out with them, and so they sometimes do really fun projects, like involve the kids, the school kids, in creating a new piece, for instance, to show them how composition evolves, and there's a lot of interaction between the school kids and the Curtis kids. It's a big part of the festival and a very important one.
We're talking to Ida Kavafian of Music from Angel Fire. So you also play the violin.
Yes.
Do you play in the festival?
Yes, I do. Yes, I play violin and sometimes viola, and I play in the festival, and luckily for me, my sister is a great violinist, and so I don't have to worry about anyone thinking there's any nepotism, because she's just fantastic, and she comes and plays. My sister.
Do you play together?
Sometimes we do. Yes, we just finished.
What's her name?
Ani, A-N-I. We just finished playing in the Santa Fe Festival, and together as well. And so it's really fun. And my husband comes. He's a violist, Stephen Tenenbaum. And a lot of great friends. It's a group of musicians that love to be with each other. Like I said, we don't have room for any divas. People have to be, they have to see the value in a place like Angel Fire and a festival like Music from Angel Fire.
So did you grow up actually playing the violin with your sister?
No. Luckily, our parents, saw that was probably not a good idea to become a sister act so early in our lives. And so we didn't play together until we were well into adulthood. As a matter of fact, my brother-in-law was the one that presented us in our debut together, which was at Carnegie Hall. And it was a fun event and something that was special because we hadn't done a lot of it. So that part was great, and we were far enough apart in age that we were able to establish our own careers and find our own preferences and go along our separate ways before we came together as sisters. And so that makes it more special in a way.
And you went to Juilliard, which is also one of the foremost music academies in the country.
Yes, I did. Yes, in New York City.
And so a distinguished musical career and teaching career and doing this music at Angel Fire. There's so many treasures here in New Mexico that we don't even know about. It's just incredible.
This is a wonderful state for arts and music, and I love coming here, I have to tell you.
So what are some of your favorite pieces that are in Music from Angel Fire this year?
Well, we have an interesting program tomorrow evening in Taos at the El Monte Sagrado. It's a benefit program for Music from Angel Fire, and it's a wonderful wonderful atmosphere because the setting is just so stunning. And I've put together a program of romantic music, and it's called Salon Music from Around the World, and we have influences from Africa and Asia and America and Europe, Eastern Europe, in a program that is maybe lighter in context, but very romantic and very, very tuneful. So that's a great program. And then we have, you know, I'm very excited about our premiere, which is taking place on the 25th in Angel Fire. We always do our world premiere in our home base, Angel Fire. We have a Baroque concert in Taos.
And that's the Lowell Lieberman.
That's right. That's right. A piano quartet. I guess September 1st is our Baroque concert in Taos. We do have two events called Closer Encounters, and those are meant to introduce people who maybe have never been to a concert to the sort of behind-the-scenes preparations so they can see what goes into putting a concert together or putting a performance together. And I think the first one is on the 20th, and we have another one on the 25th. Those are both in Angel Fire. So those are interesting and free to the public, and lots of interaction between the musicians and the audience. They ask a lot of interesting questions, and we show them how we prepare and how we practice and what the process is, you know, because it is such a painstaking process. You know, people see the finished product at a concert, and I think a lot of them are surprised at the kind of hard work it takes to get to that point.
A friend of mine was visiting, and she couldn't afford to go to all the chamber music concerts she wanted to, so she went to the rehearsals. And
it's even better.
it is in some ways, because you see something that sounds like a perfect performance, and somebody saying, no, 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 what you did there was wrong.
Yes.
So you get to see that process, which is
yes.
Great fun. There's also a benefit auction happening on Sunday, the 29th of August.
Yes, that's great fun. You know, Taos being such and Angel Fire being such artistic communities, we have a lot of friends who are painters and sculptors and visual artists that come to our concerts, and they donate works in order to raise money for our operating. And so we have at 2 o'clock on that day, we have what we call the salon concert, which is a sort of a really fun afternoon of skits and, you know, kind of fun stuff, more really informal, some serious things, but a lot of just really funny skits. And so we get to let our hair down, and people love it. And right after that concert, we go over to the Country Club, which is brand new this year. We're very excited about that. Just was built and just was finished on time. And so we'll have our auction over there. We have a silent auction and then a live auction of just some fantastic works.
And those kinds of things are always fun and many treasures.
You should see the walls in my house.
you're collecting all the objects?
Yes, it's just wonderful.
Well, Ida Kavafian, it looks to be a great year once again. Music from Angel Fire, which is happening in not only Angel Fire, but also Taos, Raton, and Las Vegas. For more information, people can go to musicfromangelfire.org. They can also find the various telephone numbers there, but I'll give you right now the toll-free number, which is 888-377-3300. Ida Kavafian, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
It was great fun to be here, Mary Charlotte. Take care.
You too. And we're going to go out now with a track from a disc of music from Angel Fire recorded about a year ago at the Taos Center for the Arts. It's music by Elgar, Salut d'Amour for two violins and piano, Opus 12. Thank you. Music from Angel Fire. We're going to take a little break. We'll be back in just a moment. Please stay tuned to KSFR. I'm very happy now to welcome Bill Conway and Joe Ray Sandoval. They are writers of the film Spoken Word, and joining us by phone, actor Miguel Sandoval, who's in that film as well. This is the film screening at the CCA in Santa Fe. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you.
So this is a real New Mexico film about a young man named Cruz Montoya who left his family in Santa Fe to go to San Francisco. There he becomes a successful teacher and poet, spoken word artist. And then he returns home when he finds out that his father is sick. And the drama and, of course, his past unfolds as these things happen. What was the origin of the story? Was there a kernel of some real person's story in this?
Well, Joe Ray came to me when my partner Karen Cook and I started a production company, Luminaria, here in Santa Fe about 5 years ago, and we're looking for local stories and writers to work with and develop stories. And a mutual friend, Rob Wilder, who many of your listeners know, introduced me to Joe Ray Sandoval, and he came in with a sheaf of poems and a notion about a poet coming back to New Mexico because his father's dying. And I'll let Joe Ray take it from there.
Yeah, it was a Hollywood story, really. Going in to meet Bill, I wasn't really sure why I was there. I knew they made movies. I pitched the story, and, after, a series of events where their first film kind of didn't pan out, they decided to do spoken word, and we went full head-on into writing the script.
And so, what material did you use? I mean, you're a New Mexican born and raised, it has a very New Mexican feel to it, obviously.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was born and bred in Santa Fe, and, I'm a promoter. There's a lot of truth in that, just drawing off personal experience. And thank God for Bill, he turned it into a great, story that we could sell and make into a movie.
Because I saw the universal story of the prodigal son returns, and a story about a man who's at a crossroads. It's more than a coming of age story. It's a becoming a man story. He's a young man, but who's had some success in his life, but he still hasn't dealt with the place that he's from, which is really Chimayo, New Mexico. So he comes back, and he doesn't talk to his father, and he has another father, really, who's played by Miguel Sandoval, his name is Emilio, who is the local club owner and talks to Cruz and supports his work, but has an evil agenda, and Miguel played that very well.
Yeah, Miguel, you are a bad guy, but as all good bad guys are, not all bad. There's a few kernels of heart in there somewhere.
Somewhere. Hi, it's Miguel Sandoval here. Somewhere. It's pretty difficult to track him down, I think, though, because he does seem quite nefarious in his selfishness. He's only really concerned with Emilio and advancing Emilio. I kept trying to find moments in there where I could show some sort of genuine affections, dare I say, to Cruz's character,
right,
played by Kuno Becker. But, really in the end, I think he's just too selfish to go there and just uses Cruz to his selfish needs.
Well, the film it's so much that age-old problem of loving where you come from, but getting immediately into the old patterns when you've broken away, you come back to the stuff that messed you up in the first place.
Yeah, it's very true. And, Santa Fe is one of those places, you hear the old adage, the land of entrapment. Santa Fe is just such a beautiful place, but it still is a small town, and Chimayo is even smaller. And I think that, when you get away, you kind of forget about it. And once you come back home, a lot of the patterns, a lot of the way of life is still the same, even 3 years later, as it is for Cruz. He comes back and he's immediately. I mean, it takes him, you know, not even 2 or 3 days, and he's already back into that same life, just because that's what it is, and it's something that's very familiar to him. And then that's where his struggles begin, you know.
Now, he has gone to, this character Cruz Montoya has gone to San Francisco and has become really a very successful teacher and poet. That's something that you, Joe Ray, bring to this, as you're a poet and a spoken word artist.
Yes.
And wrote all the poems that are in the film.
Most of them. We had a little help. But yeah, I did draw a lot off personal experience. And I'm a huge proponent of education, and I've worked with students all over the country, young people, and underserved young people mainly. And I think that this movie is a way to show how that hard work and how my dedication to writing and how important writing has been in my life. In fact, you know, I'd argue that art has saved my life. And, you know, this is our, like we like to say, this is our love poem to Santa Fe and to family. You know, in my personal life, this movie has brought my family very close, a lot closer than we were.
Really?
And there's art imitating life and vice versa. It really is a back and forth thing. And it's funny because people always tell me, or people online, they're always saying, you know, I think Miguel Sandoval is related to Joe Ray Sandoval, or vice versa, because he's the famous one. And it's great that he's from Santa Fe. And when Miguel and Ruben and Kudo and everybody was on set, it was just this great. It was like hanging out with family. You know, it was a really wonderful experience.
Now, Ruben Blades plays the father of Cruz Montoya, Cruz Sr., in this film. How did he get involved in this film?
Well, Ruben was always our first choice. No offense, Miguel, because I know that's a great role, and Ruben does a great job. But you need the light in the dark, and Ruben was at a place in his life where he was ready to play that role. He had been on the cabinet of Panama for 5 years and had been out of the business. And as he told the story, he was out of shape. He was kind of overweight. He was feeling near death's door just from sitting in meetings all the time. And he read the script. He liked it. And then, as with other actors like Miguel, Ruben was attracted to working with our director, Victor Nunez, who's most well known for Yuli's Gold with Peter Fonda, where Peter Fonda was nominated for an Oscar and won a Golden Globe. So he's a director that actors are eager to work with, and he did a great job with the great cast that we were able to assemble. I would say, based on the script also, and the other actors that came involved, and a chance to work in Santa Fe. People like to come here.
It's funny to see this very familiar face. I mean, for me as a salsa DJ and dancer, I've been seeing Ruben Blades for years, and there he is speaking with perfect New Mexico inflection.
Well, he has his own version of it, but he does. He's been practicing it since Milagro Beanfield War.
Right.
So, and he told the story when we were in New York that what was supposed to be a 3-week shoot ended up being 3 months because it was the worst weather ever. So he was up there in Truchas and just listening to people. So Miguel Sandoval, of course, grew up here. So he was the one that we would look to. Well, he listened to Miguel because that's the real thing. And our other actors did their own versions.
Well, not to Miguel Sandoval here. To production's credit, and I was just thinking of that this morning. They hired a dialect coach who was someone who really helped people unify the New Mexican dialect and have it come through. And I thought that was really, really smart of them, because everybody comes from different places. Kuno comes originally from Mexico City. Ruben's from Panama. I'm from New Mexico. Monique is from Queens, et cetera, et cetera. So that really helped a tremendous amount, and was very wise in production to do that.
Well, it's very important to do that, because sometimes, I mean, I think the worst Hollywood movies kind of lump all Latinos into one group, and just, you know, whether somebody's from El Salvador or Spain, they kind of can't get it straight.
Agreed.
Well, it was our mission on every detail, to the greatest extent possible, to make it authentic. From this set design to the props, to the costumes, to the cars, and to the accents. And Victor Nunez, our director, is a real stickler for authenticity. So he went as far as had his assistant go out and say, well, what do they do in funerals in Chimayo? Does the family sit? Or what do they wear?
Would the funeral be in Spanish or in English? I mean, that was a debate that we had.
Right.
And, you know, one of the biggest compliments, for me anyway, that I've heard about the film is when the old Chicana ladies come up to me and say, was that manteca on the shelf? You know, and just they see these details. And the whole production crew and everybody involved was very meticulous about it. And that's why I'm so proud of this movie, because, I mean, they really did a good job to keep it an authentic story. They even consulted my father, because he was always hanging around. He actually lives in Chimayo. You know, and it was that effort that made this a true New Mexico film.
Now, was it all shot here in Santa Fe?
Chimayo, mostly.
Chimayo.
Yeah.
And did you go to your own family for locations?
Oh, yeah. We used my dad's truck, the truck that I used to go for wood in when I was a little kid, you know. And, you know, they filmed on my family land up in Truchas. And, yeah, it was really a symbiotic relationship.
Miguel Sandoval here again. The first day I arrived, I drove from the Albuquerque airport all the way up to Truchas for a costume fitting. And number one, my heart rate slowed by at least a half. My blood pressure, when going up in altitude, dropped, I'm sure, 20 points easy. I just getting out of L.A., number one, and going back home, because I spent a lot of my childhood in Truchas and in those mountains, and hiking around them and getting lost and all kinds of things. So just going back there was such a wonderful thing for me. And then I get up there, and all of a sudden, I'm surrounded by Sandovales. They're all around me. I'd never been surrounded by so many Sandovales. And they all wanted to have their picture taken, and we all got in a really big group, and the people taking the picture had to keep stepping further and further back. And I thought, wow, it is so great to come home. No, I felt like I was Cruz at that moment. It was terrific.
We're talking about the film Spoken Word, which is screening this week and weekend at the CCA, the Center for Contemporary Arts, here in Santa Fe. So this is a film that I think is important to show, especially to, first of all, local audiences here in New Mexico and to young audiences. Have you done a bit of that so far?
Yes, we try. We've been in New York, we've been in L.A., along with the Santa Fe run. It's in Denver, it's in Phoenix. And as much as possible, we're trying to include local youth groups, like youth poetry groups or youth art groups, really with the message that Joe Ray alluded to, that art saves lives. And here's an example of a young man who goes through his struggles but comes out the other side thanks to his connection with his art, which is spoken word poetry. And he also mentors in the film one student in particular, and really that's a lot turns on that.
And it brings it around full circle, you know, because the next generation of writers is going to come up and speak their piece. And, you know, one thing that we like to say about this movie is, you know, we're telling a very universal story in a specific place. So as detailed as we were to New Mexico, we find, especially in New York, that this resonates for people of all different backgrounds. And it's not even limited to Latino background. It's people understand what it's like to go home. And they associate with, you know, getting stuck back in this old way of life and family, the family dynamic. You know, it's a very universal family dynamic. And like I said, you know, I think, you know, with my generation, I'm trying to say it's time to open up dialogue and to be able to say, I love you, you know, which my father and I couldn't do for most of my life until just recently. And that's when the film, we were working on the film, you know, and so now we can say those things.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
In that sense, the film has a tremendous capacity to let people see their own family dynamics.
Absolutely.
And one of the things I think is important in this film is that when Cruz goes home to New Mexico, he loses his poetic abilities for a while. He can't right anymore.
Well, and the booze and drugs don't help much either right. when it comes to that.
Yeah, he went in a downward spiral, and that was the sad irony of it, is that he established himself by learning to expose his feelings through his poetry. But when he came back, and the culture of his family and the culture at large where he was from is men don't talk about those things. But again, that is a universal story that I've had so many people from so many backgrounds say, that's my relationship with my father. Now I'm going to try and talk to him. And I certainly have had the same experience of having more conversations with both my father and my son as going through the process of making this movie, because now's the time. You never know when it's going to be taken away from you.
Every single day is the time.
Right.
This is a film that is an independent film with a first-class cast, director. How did you come up with the funding and the wherewithal to actually make the film?
I started a private equity company called New Mexico Media Partners as part of Luminaria. Karen Cook and I managed with the mandate to raise money to make multiple films in New Mexico. And Spoken Word is our first one. And the marketplace has changed. So, but we were able, based on the projects we had access to, the type of people we had worked with in our own and our backgrounds, to raise that money. And so we were the studio. New Mexico Media Partners was able to give the green light to Spoken Word. And now, while the independent film marketplace is tough, we're ahead of 95% of the films in that we have a distributor, Variance Films, out of New York. We have a home video deal through Maya Entertainment. Spoken Word will be out on video on demand and Netflix and Amazon and Blockbuster Video, all outlets starting in October. And then we have a foreign sales agent who's shopping it around the world. So it's great to see it get out into the world, and we will keep our fingers crossed that the economics turn out favorably.
Miguel Sandoval, you have a long and distinguished career in both TV and film. Are you hoping to do more independent films of this kind anytime soon?
Yes, I am. Absolutely. I'm always on the lookout, well, for a good story. And I think I'll go out on a limb here and say that most of those good stories exist in the independent film circle. It seems that, you know, more and more that large studio pictures seem to be involved with the special effects, frankly, and less concerned with the story. So, yes, I am. I'm hoping to do them, and I'm hoping to do more films like this in New Mexico. It's my dream to come back to New Mexico for good someday, not in the not too distant future.
Well, that will be a great boon to New Mexico's burgeoning film industry. The film Spoken Word is screening at the CCA, which can be found on the web at ccasantafe.org. The phone number there is 505-982-1338. Bill Conway and Joe Ray Sandoval are the writers of the film, and Miguel Sandoval is one of the actors in it. And we're going to hear a little clip from the film as we go out. Gentlemen, thank you all so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary
Thanks,
Charlotte.
Mary Charlotte. It's good to see you again.
Likewise.
Thank you so much.
Unspoken words. The cement this house is built on.
Hey, Cruz, come on in.
Hey, Cruz.
Wow, place looks great.
It's all Gabriel, man. I just tried to pull my weight. Let's go down here.
So, what are we gonna do about Pops?
What can we do? Doesn't want anyone to even know he has cancer, much less do anything about it. So? That's it. I've got my own family now, Cruz. And that old man hasn't hardly said two words to me since Mom died. The only time I see him is when Gabriel drags me out there for the holidays so the kids can know their abuelo. But you saw it. The weather never changes.
He's still mad at you for selling the land.
Yeah, well, he needs to get over it.
It's not that easy, Ray Ray. When he gave you that land for your wedding, it was like giving you a piece of her family. And when you sold it, and to Emilio, it was like stabbing him in the back.
Yeah, Emilio made me the best offer.
That's not the point.
It was to me. I used that money to make a down payment on this house, which Gabriel and I are working our asses off to pay for. And who are you to talk? You run off to California so you don't have to deal with anything, and that precious family land just sits there, growing weeds and getting shit on by squirrels. If you ever get some, I'll bet you'll sell it too.
Maybe I will, maybe I won't.
That's your bipolar thing, bro. Maybe you should take another pill.
I didn't come here to fight with you, Ray Ray. Our father is dying.
What do you want me to do?
I remember when you fell. You got right back up and kept on following me, bloody knees and all. Now we've forgotten everything. The summer and the fall.
And once again, that's a clip from the film Spoken Word that is screening at the CCA here in Santa Fe. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. And my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And after that, jazz.